Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers! And, well, sorry, I was miles away. Where am I? Recording studio. What is it? A Kalashnikov advert voiceover. Documentary about British teenagers breaking the Spanish communal vomiting record in Ibiza. Laying down some backing vocals for Beyonce's new single about the dangers of quantitative easing in a delicately balanced global economy. Oh, it's Bugle. Yep, got it. Got it, Bugle. Right, Bugle heads. Okay, welcome to issue 136 of the Bugle. Audio newspaper for a visual world. With me, Andy Zaltzman, officially 2 billionth in line to the Albanian throne. Here, live in London and in New York City, the man who, according to WikiLeaks, thinks that Mexico is the greatest nation in the world and that you can both run and hide, provided that you prepare properly for doing so, and that if you shout whilst underwater in the sea, you can insult a dolphin on the other side of the world. It's John Oliver!
Hello, Andy! Hello, Buglers! And Andy, well, I can't believe you haven't already mentioned it. Happy Hanukkah, Andy.
Oh, I did not tell you. Yeah, I don't like to blow my people's trumpet. Look, but yeah, no, thanks, mate. Yeah, it's been
the chosen trumpet. Do you know what day of Hanukkah it is, Andy? Or have you got absolutely no idea?
I mean, days.
Bad.
There's days and there's days, aren't there? All I know is that Santa Claus brought me some candles.
Andy, I was out in LA all last week shooting some episodes of a sitcom called Community. And on that note, the special Christmas episode is on this coming Thursday. Not only special because it's about Christmas, but also because it's going to be an entirely stop-motion claymation. So I'm going to be a clay model for half an hour, Andy. Not only that, I'm actually going to be a clay Christmas wizard for half an hour. I think I've always wanted to be modelled in clay, but I don't think I ever fully knew that until it finally happened. Because I do remember I actually tried to make a self-portrait in pottery class when I was 11, but it turned out so badly that I had to just turn it into a shark instead. And now that I've achieved clay, next stop marble, Andy, with a marble penis paid for by the Italian taxpayer. That is the dream. Now, you've already been a clay model, haven't you, Andy?
I have, on our wedding cake.
Interesting you'd call it wedding cake, Andy, because just so Buglers know, Andy's sister made him into a clay model to stick into the top of his wedding cake or wedding Serrano ham, depending on whether you're describing it to your Jewish grandmother or to everyone else in the world.
Well, I don't know if she's listening in, John, so let's just call it a cake.
Okay, cake it is.
A cake it is.
What would you like to be modelled in next, Andy? Chocolate, ivory, or just carved into the side of a mountain?
I think rightly I should be carved into the side of a mountain. I think I'm one of the greatest presidents America could have had. I have been made in plaster of Paris as well. My father made a sculpture, who's a sculptor, made a sculpture of me when I was about six. So I have that already. I'm just bored of being sculpted.
Wow, yeah.
It happens all the bloody time. Members of my family just see me and they start sculpting me. It's really hard to build up a proper relationship with any of them.
Yeah. People are always hiding a chisel behind their back. Every time you turn around, you just hear tap, tap, tap.
Ice, maybe. I might do my next Edinburgh show as a block of ice.
Good idea. So, if you fancy seeing me as a clay Christmas wizard, and I'm not sure who in their right mind would not fancy that, then tune in to NBC this Thursday at 8. Or if you don't live in America, then I'm guessing there's some kind of technological voodoo that you can do on the internet that means you can watch it on your computer instead. Sadly, I'm no practitioner of technological voodoo, so I can't be any more specific.
This is Bugle 136, meaning that if you lined up 136 speakers around a small circular arena and played one issue of the Bugle from each of them, a person standing in the exact middle of that arena would be vaporised. This is for the week beginning Monday, the 6th of December, 2010, meaning that exactly 242 years ago, John, hot off the presses, was the first ever edition of the Encyclopaedia Britannica. Bit of a tautology, that. If it's not British, it doesn't really count as an encyclopaedia. As the knowledge within it cannot be verified. And it's funny to think, just under a quarter of a millennium later, that's nothing in ecological terms. Funny to think quite how inaccurate some of the entries from that first encyclopaedia were. For example, America. The entry for America is a funny little place where idiots go to die of exciting illnesses, not readily available on the British death market. An annoying outpost of Britain, frankly silly distance off the coast of Cornwall, America is of little worth, of minimal interest, and of negative culture. America should be avoided at all costs unless one is in desperate need of a new hat or a very long walk. Population, losers. Oh, no, sorry, hang on, I've got them mixed up. That's from this year's edition.
Oh, good luck getting through US security next time you come out, Andy. Good luck.
Independent for 234 years, still haven't got your own language. Or your own colours on your flag. Sorry to insult your country, John. Anyway, as always, some sections of the Bugle are going straight in the bin. This week, alongside the money section, which includes a fascinating look at the most satisfying banknotes to bribe people with, in the bin is a proactive parenting section. Could a summer holiday in an Indonesian sweatshop turn your lazy, no-good kid into a go-getting high achiever when your pampered layabout sees what his overseas peer group can achieve with the right incentivization? Watch him turn his young life around and understand the true meaning of I want the same pair of trainers that Jason's mummy has just bought for him. Also, how a hostage situation can bring a family together. Let America's top home ambush specialists, Domesti Snatch, whose slogan is putting the just kidding into just kidnapping, contrive a hyper-realistic raid and incarceration in the comfort of your own house. Domesti Snatch will safely bundle you and your loved ones into your own cellar and chain you comfortably to your radiator with high-quality, internally heated stainless steel chains and keep you reasonably adequately fed and watered until you've thrashed out all your deep-seated family feuds and found a new shared love and understanding through adversity. With prices ranging from just $499 for a single-day hostage scenario up to $2,995 for a week-long darkened captivity with convincingly authentic death threats, including a 95% rebate on all ransoms paid, Domesti Snatch will prove that family time is quality time, or else. Clinically proven in tests to be 35% more effective at repairing family eruptions than a beach holiday in Cancun. And also, faking your own death, how to make your children love you more and save money at Christmas. That's in the bin.
Top story this week. Oh, shit, the world is leaking! And the world of international relations sprung a leak so big this last week that it would take a morbidly obese Dutch boy to stick his bloated finger in it to stop the flow. The controversial whistleblowing website WikiLeaks published the first phase of what they claim is more than 250,000 secret State Department documents in one of the biggest leaks of classified information in human history. In fact, this was only really a leak in the sense that the Niagara River has a slight leak near northern Buffalo. The only problem with sifting through all this is the sheer scale involved. There are so many documents that WikiLeaks is only releasing information in stages, essentially serialising the leaks like Charles Dickens did. And just like a Dickens novel, when you put all the documents together, they make one dense, borderline impenetrable read with a lot of funny names to help you get through.
Yep, Armageddon is upon us, as God himself foretold, the infinite-year-old white male of no fixed abode. The end would be presaged by a website leaking a mixture of potentially sensitive information and degrade diplomatic gossip. This will undermine the very foundations of international politics and, by association, of human life itself, leading inexorably to chaos, conflict, and someone misinterpreting a private conversation and starting a nuclear war. Oh well, it was fun while it lasted, but I guess all good things come to an end. Thank you, Julian Assange. Thank you very much.
Merci. he's Australian, doesn't count, but still. So, what has the global response to the biggest revelation of classified information in history been so far? Well, slight disappointment, to be honest. The complaint seems to be there are no real surprises therein. What we basically learned was that everything you assume about how nations behave and what they think about each other, it turns out you've been essentially assuming correctly. And people seem almost disappointed that they haven't been up to anything much more interesting than this. Oh, North Korea's arms dealing with Iran? Well, that's what we all thought. America thinks Karzai's corrupt? Big whoop! Putin's the big power in Russia? Yawnsville. The US has been conducting drone attacks in Yemen? Tell me something a six-year-old girl doesn't know. But here's the thing. If there are truly no surprises here, maybe the documents aren't to blame. Perhaps it's our fault. We've now become so cynical that it is impossible to surprise us anymore. We're so quick to expect the worst that when our instinct turns out to be true, all of a sudden we start complaining that we knew all along. Perhaps we're just so jaded that the world is consistently meeting our worst expectations. Oh, what's that you say? The American government pressured Germany to not pursue charges against CIA agents who arrested an innocent man and sent him to be interrogated at Guantanamo Bay? Big deal. I already guessed that was happening. But again, so what if you already assumed that? That is objectively a big deal. Just because it doesn't happen to be surprising to you does not affect the fundamental issue of the deal's overall size.
It does give some insight into how American foreign policy works, previously only available to the public from sources such as 24, the Bourne trilogy, and the Naked Gun films.
Yeah.
And it does, as you say, seem that basically just involves bitching behind people's backs and low-level mischief-making. It's basically life skills learnt in the school playground, which... Well, it's good to know that that's all you need to get into top-level diplomacy.
Yeah, but again, I think that's what everyone already assumes.
Yeah. Peter King, though, the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee in America, he expressed support for listing WikiLeaks as a foreign terrorist organisation. And
pretty shit getting, terrorist organisation.
Getting a bit overexcited, he said, WikiLeaks presents a clear and present danger to the national security of the United States. And then added, can I get a part in the film, please? I thought that was pretty authentic. I can hammer it up a bit more if you want. Zoom in on the words clear and present danger and whack some orchestral behind it. Bingo!
Or maybe, overall, we're right to be disappointed by these secrets. And it's just that the Patriot Act has now so devolved the term classified that most of these documents are actually nothing you wouldn't reasonably expect to find in the bins outside the back of the UN.
It's basically graffiti, essentially.
Yeah, or is there a third option here? Maybe this is a grand scheme on behalf of the American government to convince them that they're not nefarious at all. They're just fucking boring. So, who is the evil and or heroic genius behind all this? Well, as you mentioned, the mastermind is a man named Julian Assange, a rodenty Australian computer hacker driven to embarrass governments into greater transparency. Now, what would possess someone to do this with their lives? Is it a selfless desire to see the world become a better place? Or is it because the girl he liked at school refused to go out on a date with him and he's never really gotten over it? Well, when you hear him talk, it could well be both. Because when asked about his motives by Time magazine, he said, I like crushing bastards. It's very satisfying to me. Of course, there's a personal psychology to it that I enjoy crushing bastards. I like a good challenge. So he sees this as a kind of egomaniacal diplomatic whack-a-mole game. I just don't think that you can use a phrase like crushing bastards unless you're either a professional wrestler or a professional superhero. Either way, you have to be wearing a cape.
Well, we have a Julian Assange fact box now. Julian Assange was secretly born in obscurity somewhere he won't let anyone know about. Nobody knows if he was born to a human mother or not. We can only guess. He might or might not have been raised in the wild as a feral child by wolves, but he won't leak that information, the f***ing hypocrite. Assange defends himself by saying that most stuff in the world is the result of leaks. Take the Ten Commandments, he said yesterday. Did God really want that public domain, or did he simply have to make up a cover story because Moses couldn't keep his big f***ing mouth shut? And if someone hadn't leaked it out that Germany had invaded Poland, the Second World War would never have happened, would it? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Assange's first leak was due to a misunderstanding at school. A friend said, hey, Julian, I need to take a leak. And Assange took him to one side and gave him copies of phone records proving that his friend's mother was having an affair with a geography teacher. This was also Assange's first experience of being called an interfering little by the people involved in the leak. Assange thinks a fact is not a fact until it is covertly disseminated to the media. When he was a little boy, he would not believe his mummy had bought a bag of oranges from the shop until she had fed the details of the purchase to a journalist from the local paper and he'd seen proof on the following day's front page. Only then would he come down from his bedroom to have his orange. He was a very thin boy. Assange claims he has information about every single person in the world. If you've forgotten something about yourself, just give him a call and he'll pop the info on his website. Only this morning I couldn't remember what I'd been doing between the years 1998 and 2007. So I called Assange, wherever he is currently hiding from international justice, and 20 minutes later I read online that I had in fact been fighting against the drug cartels in Medellin, Colombia. Thankfully, Times Online then offered me the Bugle gig and I got out before it was too late. That's your Julian Assange fact box.
As for the content itself, some of the communications between US diplomats turned out to be pretty strange in terms of tone. When discussing Russia's president, Medvedev, a diplomat says that he plays Robin to Putin's Batman. Now, did they use this analogy in a communication with their 9-year-old son to try and get him to understand the complexity of what daddy does for a living? Because otherwise that seems a little bit glib for high-level diplomacy. Apparently, Putin himself responded to this revelation, saying he believed that the author of the cable, I quote, aimed to slander one of us. Yes, that is true. And it was clearly Medvedev. I think that's pretty self-evident there. They called him Robin, for sake, calling someone Robin is not a compliment, just as no one has ever called someone Batman as an insult. You'd never say, he governs like a mighty Robin. Or, he's frequently overruled in policy discussions, like Batman.
Russia was also described as a virtual mafia state with widespread corruption, bribery and protection rackets.
Yes.
And Putin thanked WikiLeaks for the compliment and said that should help us secure the World Cup bid. The bribery worth an estimated $300 billion a year in Russia. Which just goes to show how many
big
new
industry.
Markets capitalism can open up for.
Big,
you're just
big
prepared
industry.
To let them go.
Bribery should float itself on the stock market. Yeah. Incorporate. The documents also describe French President Nicolas Sarkozy as possessing a thin-skinned and authoritarian personal style. Again, I don't think he'd be insulted by that, Andy. I think he basically models himself on being a modern-day Napoleon with a significantly more attractive wife.
And Angela Merkel was described as risk-averse and rarely creative. And John, history tells us these are unquestionably extremely desirable qualities
yes,
in a German leader.
Absolutely. If that is the biggest of her character flaws, let her be in charge forever. Italian Prime Minister and her bugle muse Silvio Berlusconi is described as feckless, vain and ineffective as a modern European leader. Now, I actually think he might be offended by that description if he ever watched the news and didn't have his head buried between the breasts of a 19-year-old in a bikini.
Well, on the subject of having your head buried in breasts, Colonel Gaddafi has apparently said to rely heavily on a voluptuous Ukrainian nurse. A voluptuous blonde Ukrainian nurse. And, well, don't we all, in a way? Mm-hmm. Let he who has never relied heavily on a voluptuous blonde Ukrainian nurse. But there's something interesting here, John, because Gaddafi's reliance on this voluptuous blonde Ukrainian nurse does mm-hmm. seem to have coincided with Libya becoming a much more moderate, West-friendly nation.
That's true.
He was world enemy number one back in the 1980s.
Yep.
One voluptuous blonde Ukrainian nurse later, he is a valuable trade partner. We need to be deploying voluptuous blonde Ukrainian nurses.
Yes.
In fact, any voluptuous blonde nurses, Ukrainian or otherwise, to the world's trouble spots. Would Ahmadinejad be such a gobby little shite if he had a voluptuous blonde nurse to cuddle up to in the afternoons? Of course he wouldn't, John.
Andy, you have just written the script for a 1970s porn film.
We should be, again, we should be, I was a bit of a prodigy in the 70s. We should be airdropping voluptuous nurses over northern Pakistan and Yemen, as far as I'm concerned. That is the way forward for humanity.
Yeah. Incidentally, the cables also comment on the extremely close relationship between Putin and Berlusconi. Apparently they exchange lavish gifts. And I do like the idea that they're each other's G8 secret Santa. Although, I dread to think what lavish gifts they actually exchange, because I have a horrible instinct that they might involve the words human or endangered species trafficking. North Korea's Kim Jong-il is described as a flabby old chap. Pretty low blow, Andy, referring to his weight. It's that kind of comment that leads to unrealistic body images for modern world leaders. Kim Jong-il sees magazines featuring a shirtless Putin and he gets depressed and runs to the fridge to gorge on ice cream. It's very sad. But as you can see, these cables do start to sound less like diplomacy and more like a trashy supermarket magazine. It's basically a combination of gossip and character assassinations. The UN is becoming Us Weekly. Just wait until Ban Ki-moon announces a resolution to decide who wore it best this week in terms of charcoal grey suits.
Other leaks has broken exclusively to the Bugle Twitter feed at Hello Buglers this week include details on world leaders' secret crushes. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the Iranian Simon Cowell, apparently, quotes, has a major thing for Serena Williams. And whenever the 13-time major winner is on the telly, he, quote, makes some half-assed excuse about catching up with his emails and locks himself in his office before emerging an hour and a half later, dressed in tennis kit and sweating profusely. The crushes also include Benjamin Netanyahu finding Angela Merkel, quotes, curiously distracting, but knowing that admitting so either to her or to a chat show on Israeli television would be political dynamite. Leaks also claim that Netanyahu has sent Merkel Valentine's cards every year since 2006 and once asked her whether she wanted to have a strum on his Israeli ukulele. But unfortunately she didn't hear him, he claimed, because she was making doughy eyes at Spanish PM Zapatero. And the leaks also said that he, quote, stops cabinet meetings whenever Beyonce is on MTV. Meanwhile, Hu Jintao, the Chinese premier,
yes.
is apparently frequently overheard muttering Zooey Deschanel's name in his sleep, and owns copies of all her films on DVD and Blu-ray, The Happening, which Hu himself described as patently rubbish, but worth watching anyway, because, well, oh yeah. Vladimir Putin has a signed poster of pop star Kylie Minogue, quotes, oddly close to his bed in the Kremlin. And Libya's number one, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, has it hot for all weather girls. So do keep tuned into the Bugle Twitter feed to find more leaders' crushes this week.
The Happening was beneath her, Andy. It was beneath her talents. Yep. So. Another really intriguing bit of information was apparently when Afghanistan's vice president visited the UAE last year, local authorities discovered that he was carrying $52 million on his person in cash.
Wow.
How the f*** do you even do that, Andy? Presuming that you're not carrying it around in $52 million bills. I get nervous carrying around a couple of $100. Please tell me, please, Andy, that he did not smuggle that inside his rectum. Please tell me he didn't do that as he shuffled painfully slowly through the airport before quietly asking for a large coffee and making his way to the bathroom.
Well, I guess we'll just have to look over the CCTV footage, see if he was pushing a wheelbarrow full of dried apricots. that's quite a lot of money for an Afghan politician to have.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, as we discussed a while ago on the Bugle, Hamid Karzai, the president, is paid about $500 a month. So I don't know how long he'd have to work for that for. Presumably, I don't know. That's about 100,000 years worth of money, I think.
Well, it's like selling advertising space, Andy. They also work on commission. Commission being for gigantic heroin deals. The cables also appear to reveal discussions between various countries on whether or not they would take prisoners released from Guantanamo Bay. Slovenia apparently was offered the chance to meet President Obama if it took a prisoner, whilst Kiribati in the South Pacific was offered millions of dollars of incentives. Brussels got told that taking prisoners could be a low-cost way for Belgium to attain prominence in Europe. So it's basically essentially haggling. Now, these prisoners have become currency. If you take three prisoners, the president will sign a body part of your choice. If you take six prisoners, he'll do a little dance for you. If you take 10 prisoners, the president will let you kick him in the balls. If you take 12 prisoners, he'll let you film it.
National tragedy news now, and England have been denied their rightful birthright, the 2018 World Cup.
It's a disgrace, Andy.
Yep.
It's a f***ing disgrace.
There's been rioting on the streets. We are at war with FIFA. We are at war with FIFA. Oh, stand by your radios and await further instructions.
Two votes?
Yep. And one of them was the British guy.
So, I didn't even know that.
That's one vote.
That's one vote.
That works out at quite a lot of £1 million per vote.
Who was that vote from?
Not sure.
Who did we basically
Japan.
Give all that money to?
It was Japan.
Japan.
Was right. Well, there you go. Well, we have.
Jeez.
Fair enough.
What a mess.
Well, at least
they?
We've built some bridges with them over the last 65 years.
How much did it cost, that World Cup?
I think it was about 15 million quid, wasn't it?
Oh, ouch.
15 million quid. And most embarrassingly, we sent the future King of England to help the presentation. And alongside David Beckham was Prince William as well. And David Cameron as well. So,
Beckham.
You know.
Beckham, his speech, David Beckham got very moved. He was talking about his grandfather and how he grew up. Football was a very important part of his life. And he was beaten. People thought, oh, we've got it here, because, you know, Beckham's crying. So, you know, we've got to have this. Tears on his beautiful face. But then the Russian bid, Andrei Ishvarin, also gave an emotional speech. So it seems they were... Each country just wanted to make a footballer cry. Does it make your best footballer cry? We'll judge from that.
And it's just extraordinary, the full force of British celebrity culture, renowned as the greatest celebrity culture in the world, proved insufficient to win over FIFA, who are, as we all know, a clutch of star-struck sycophants, and at the centre of it all, in his giant pool of slime, Sepp Blatter the Hutt. But I guess, and you know, it's a tragedy for this country, John. It's not just denied England the right to host the game that we invented and lent to the world, and I think maybe we should call that
least, in. Least, Andy. Yeah.
But it's also denied Scotland the greatest day in their footballing history, which was seeing England knocked out on their own soil of the quarter-finals by someone like Hungary.
Which also denied the US, Andy. Because the US got beaten by Qatar.
Yep.
You know, Russia and Qatar, two underdogs. Who'd have expected it, Andy?
Well,
two oil-rich nations coming through at the last minute.
Well, I think, to be fair, John, looking at it objectively, that you look at all the bids and all the presentations, I think the bids by oil-rich Russia and oil-rich Qatar were certainly the strongest, absolutely, without any question at all. If FIFA really wanted to push the boundaries of football, John, into the Middle East, what they should have done is given it to a country with bigger area, bigger population, much greater cultural interest for the visiting spectators, some history of playing football and qualifying for World Cups, whose domestic league gets similar crowds to the Russian domestic league. And that country, John, is Iran. When you want peace in the Middle East, you give the World Cup to Ahmadinejad. No one can screw up a World Cup, John.
That would be something.
And, a lot of people have said, well, we'd rather have a free media than not have a free media and have the World Cup. And I think this is way out of line with national sentiment, John.
That is not remotely true.
I think most people in this country would far rather have no media at all and jail sentences for speaking out of turn, but to host the World Cup.
You could literally give people that direct choice. Would you like a free press? Yeah, I'd love a free press. Okay. Would you like a free press or the World Cup? Oh, World Cup! World Cup!
Other football news now, and Eric Cantona, the French former footballer, former Manchester United star from the 1990s, has branched out from football and low-grade acting, which he specialised in recent years, to delve into the world of macroeconomics and encourage people to take all of their money out from their banks in a coordinated action on a single day, thereby basically cripple the French banking system.
What a strange man.
A strange man. Yeah, fair play to him, though. And, because a lot of people say, well, you know, this isn't really his field of expertise and he should stick to what he knows about, which is playing football well about 15 years ago and talking bullshit.
Yeah.
And which, you know, that is not a criticism coming from the Bugle.
Yeah.
But fair play to footballers to delve into economics. It's good to have a hobby. And also, the 1980s Brazilian midfield star Falcao has urged the World Bank to completely restructure its debt financing regulations, which he, along with ex-Real Madrid sweeper Fernando Hierro, views inimical to long-term developing world growth. Meanwhile, England's erstwhile battering ram centre-forward Mark Hakeley believes that the offside law in football points the direction towards greater regulation of the financial sector. Without offside, he said, you just end up with everyone goal-hanging trying to get easy tap-ins without making any real effort. And that's exactly what the big banks have done in an under-regulated market. Man, it makes me cranky. I had to play with the offside rule throughout my illustrious club career and slightly disappointing England career. And these f***ers have been free to do whatever they want. If that is justice, I want no part of it. That's what Hatley had to say. Your emails now. This email comes in from someone who is not going to put their real name on it as their boss listens to the Bugle. And the reason for that will become clear. On the subject, the Bugle caused me to bring my company's IT services to a screaming halt. Let me explain. I was enjoying some vintage Bugle and laughing as usual, but when Andy whipped out the corker, that is, what's that done to the f***ing graph in Bugle 99? Oh, that must have been the Dave Gorman gold story.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard I fell backwards off my chair and managed to grab the power cord for the servers in our building and ripped it straight out of the power box, plunging the building into an age without computers. Not only had the Bugle caused me to damage some very expensive server equipment, but I couldn't finish listening to the episode.
Oh, that's great.
Suffice to say, the IT outage has cost the company an estimated $17,000 so far. Whoops. I do hope that figure is at least true, if not an underestimation.
Oh, that is the single best response to a Bugle, or indeed a joke I've ever heard. That's like what you would want, like in a slapstick comedy. That is how you would imply laughter.
Yep.
Someone falling over and yanking a cable out of a wall. That is so fantastic.
The $17,000 joke.
Oh, God, that has made my day.
He continues, please consider the damage the Bugle can cause if not used responsibly, or at least warn your listeners of the danger of listening while sitting in chairs that may give way with sudden laughter. Well, can anyone better that? Then if you cost your company more than $17,000 through a Bugle-related accident?
No way.
Do email in.
No way. That is fantastic.
In fact, we've got a competition. My sister's Helen from the Answer Me This podcast. They've produced a book called, appropriately, Answer Me This, and there are two copies signed by her and Ollie, who she does the podcast with, and Chris and I'll sign them as well if you want.
Yeah.
And I'll PP it for John.
Yeah.
Even though we've got nothing to do with it. Anyway. Yeah. So they can be a Christmas prize for making up the best story about costing the Bugle costing your company or your nation or the world a lot of money. So do send those in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk.
Just know that you'll still be in second place to the real one. He should get a book just for that.
Well, he can have a book. And there's another
there
book for the best made-up story of costing money through listening to the Bugle. And we better put a deadline on this. What should we say? Next
Christmas.
Next Christmas. next Friday morning.
Yes.
Friday the 10th.
In US time, US morning.
Yeah.
9 a.m. US time, whatever that is.
All right. Fake morning.
So congratulations, Mr. Anonymous, whose name I know. Oh, in fact, he signs it, yours faithfully, David, I'm screwing Britain Cameron. Well, I hope that's true.
We have an email here from the Southern Hemisphere, Andy. Subject line, the products of the Southern Hemisphere. It says, Dear Chris, this is just to you, Chris.
Yes.
Please remind Herr Zaltzman that the Southern Hemisphere has produced the following people. 1, Sir Donald Bradman. 2, Jonah Lomu, fantastic player. 3, Edson Arantes de Nascimento, KBE, better known as Pele. 4, Sir Edmund Hillary. 5, Farlap. Whereas the Northern Hemisphere is solely responsible for 1, Silvio Berlusconi, exactly. 2, Kim Jong-il, only just. 3, Adolf Hitler, yeah.
4, he was a New Zealander, wasn't he?
4, George W. Bush.
He talked like a New Zealander.
5, the practice of giving out honours to entire cricket teams as a reward for the achievement of winning a narrow 2-1 series at home. Call us when you don't suck at sports. Love, the Southern Hemisphere. Ooh.
Well, look at the scoreboard, Southern Hemisphere. Look at the scoreboard.
That was sent on Tuesday the 30th.
Oh, right.
Things have changed since then.
Was that the Tuesday the 30th that England finished racking up 500 for 1? Against the Southern Hemisphere's finest. Our hemisphere is so much f***ing better than yours. If it wasn't for gravity, you f***ing lot wouldn't even be here. thanks also to those who sent in their thoughts on Silvio Berlusconi and the penis story. some pretty decent ashes puns, actually. Which I might save over for next week. Because, I had quite a big run of puns last week.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's just a fallow week.
Or don't read
it. F*** you, John. if you'd stayed on the continent that gave you life, you'd have more right to tell us how to live.
Are you saying that if John came back to England, you'd never do pun runs again?
Ooh, Andy, because that is really tempting.
I'm not saying I'd never do them again.
Right,
just saying
okay.
I might do them a bit less often.
That's still tempting.
So do keep your emails and competition entries coming in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. And there'll be another competition next week for tickets to my January London run at the Soho Theatre.
When is that?
I can't remember. I think it's the 13th.
Oh, that's great, Andy. That's great. Well done. You are so smooth as a promoter. I don't know. January sometime.
It's middle of January, so I think it might be the 13th or the 15th. Look on the internet, losers.
What's the address of the Soho Theatre, Andy?
Oh, it's in Soho, mate, isn't it?
Too late. That's not specific
enough.
Just wander
around Soho till you see it. Dean Street.
What's the booking number I could call, Andy?
Well, that's, just dial 0800 Mix-a-Lot. He set it up, you see. It was supposed to be a predominantly arse-based drama.
That's what you'd think.
Yeah.
When he came out with that magnificent song, I think people just assumed it was a rump-based phone line. Whereas in fact, it was a booking service, a preemptive booking service for Andy Zaltzman's London gigs.
That's right. So, due to someone else pulling out, it's a pretty last-minute thing in a theatre that's probably a little bit too big. So do help me pad out the embarrassing gaps, buglers. in the middle of January at the Soho Theatre.
God, you sound just like Leonardo DiCaprio selling his latest movie.
That's right. Sport now, and take that, Australia!
Take that!
I know it's still technically 0-0, but take that anyway! As we record, we can't lose this game, John. I mean, that is the first time we will have not lost back-to-back matches in Australia since 1994. We have been breaking records.
It has been the most emphatic way to not win a game, this.
So far, and it looks like the rain... the cowardly Australian rain. I mean, if they were real men, they'd stay out there in the thunderstorms and take what's coming to them. But instead, they run for cover, the little bastards. If I may quote one of their own. But we have been absolutely smashing records, John, like fragile plates at an exuberant Greek wedding between two discus throwers during an earthquake. That is, I mean, the Australian bowlers, John, they have shown all the penetration of an inebriated eunuch. And they are historically shit at the moment, Australia. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, after everything we've been through in the last two decades in cricketing terms, I think we should take a few moments to appreciate this. I realise that some of our American listeners might not care. But actually, there was a story about this girl who had a Twitter tag called At The Ashes. She was she's some girl from Maine, and she started being bombarded with cricket related tweets, not having ever really heard of cricket.
Oh, I see.
So maybe this could be the foothold that the game's been seeking in North America ever since the demise of the great Philadelphia team in the early 20th century.
Could be. Who knows? England needed this, though, Andy.
Yeah.
It's not just the cricketing states that we've been in for the last few years. It's also, you know, we've had a rough 12 months.
Yeah.
Now, economically, we're a complete mess. We just lost the World Cup bid. It just gives people a bit of a lift to see English people, or, you know, at least South African people who pretend to be English, hitting small red balls with pieces of wood off people who can't really throw it very well. It really gets you where it's needed.
I think you've explained that very well for any non-cricket following buglers there. But it just goes to show that we in Britain, we can still recruit outstanding cricketers from around the world.
Yep.
To patch up the holes in our national game.
It has always been my dream to play for England. Since I was a little boy. I've always felt very English,
That's it. Well, we'll give you an update on exactly how much we are not losing to Australia next week on the Bugle. Bugle 137, it'll be. Of course, the score that Jeff Boycott scored at the Oval in 1981.
Okay.
That's it, Buglers. Do keep those emails coming in and follow the Bugle Twitter feed at Hello Buglers for all the latest made-up leaks. Bye-bye.
Sayonara, Bugler!